This is 90.9 WBUR. You're listening to Radio Boston's special coverage. I'm Deborah Becker. Tonight, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh delivers his second State of the City address from Symphony Hall. He's expected to talk about things like lower crime rates, housing goals, the city's economic future, especially with General Electric moving to the seaport, and say some positive things about Boston schools, even though parents and students are protesting expected budget cuts outside Symphony Hall. Mayor Walsh should speak in about 20 minutes or so from now, but first in the studio, we're joined by two people who know Boston and the city's politics. Tom Keene's a former Boston City Councilor and a writer for WBUR's opinion page, Cognoscenti. Welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
Also with us is Michael Curry, president of Boston's NAACP. Welcome to you as well.
Glad to be here as well.
I'd like to start with you, Michael Curry. Can you tell me, what do you want to hear from Mayor Walsh tonight?
Well, I think, you know, and I've had this conversation directly with him. I think one is, you know, you can't deliver a rising tides lifts all boats message. It has to be targeted at neighborhoods and communities. There are some positive stories to tell about the city, but when you get into communities, some of those things don't sort of pan out for those neighborhoods, whether it's unemployment, whether it's the crime rate, whether it's the opportunity divide. So I'm hoping to hear him talk specifically about what he can do that's intentional to help those communities.
And Tom, what about you? What are you interested in hearing from the mayor tonight?
So I think one of the big problems that confronts Boston, as well as many other urban areas, is they have become, as I think it was the social scientist Richard Florida said, playgrounds for the rich. You have cities are rapidly gentrifying. People with money move in. Middle-class people find that they have no place within there. And you see within cities kind of this sort of growing divide between rich and poor without any middle in there. You know, Mayor Walsh probably is going to be talking about how many affordable housing units are being built, and that's great. But that doesn't really address the problem that Boston faces in terms of a declining middle class, because they have more money than is needed for the affordable housing, but they don't have enough money to be able to pay market rate housing in Boston. So as a result, what you see is this weird phenomenon, almost this cycle of young people living in the city, perhaps coupled up, but at the point that they have children, they feel pressured just in terms of rents, never mind schools, to move outside of the city. They stay outside of the city for 20 years, and then maybe when they're house rich and, you know, they've had appreciation on their house in the suburbs and the kids are gone, they're able to move back in, and all of a sudden they're the new elite. But we really are losing kind of that middle class with parents with kids in particular.
It almost seems to me like both of you are saying something similar here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, exactly. You called it an opportunity divide, and you said it's not trickling down to some of the neighborhoods, and we're talking about gentrifying. Is that the issue for Boston, and is it contributing to a lot of the other issues that we're seeing in this city?
Well, I think that is one of the pressing issues. I think for me and for the communities I represent, the education issues, a critical one. Right now, the mayor has to speak to, we have a new superintendent, but we still have a school system that is not educating all of its kids in a way that's competitive, that will set them up for a very successful future. And quite frankly, it breaks down by racial lines in this city. So there is some work that has to be done, some legacy, some leftover business from the Menino administration that we need to see progress on. And I'm hoping that he'll speak to what the vision is, but also what's been done to address those issues.
You know, I want to just talk about education for a moment and play a piece of tape from a woman that we spoke with earlier today on Radio Boston. Mary Lewis Pierce is a special education attorney and parent advocate, and she's among those who are actually protesting at Symphony Hall tonight regarding the $50 million in budget cuts expected in the Boston public schools. Let's listen to what she had to say on our show today.
We are facing a $50 million budget deficit. It's been the third year in a row where we've faced budget deficits. So the time Marty Walsh has been in office, we have faced $190 million budget cuts to the schools and services, because that's what happens when you have a deficit.
Okay, that's Mary Lewis Pierce. She's among those demonstrating at Mayor Walsh's State of the City address tonight, and she says the $50 million budget cut represents 3 years in a row of budget deficits. Mayor Walsh's office issued a statement saying, no, I've actually given $90 million to the schools since I've been in office. So, of course, there are, what is it, numbers, lies, right. What is it, statistics, damn statistics and lies, right? I mean, we can twist budget numbers any way we want, but let's talk about the mayor's commitment to education. Tom, what do you say about that?
So just in terms of the numbers, I think that it is correct that spending has increased. The problem is that the source of that increase, or the money that where that money is going, essentially means you're paying for higher salaries, and as a result, you really need to cut schools. And that's really why the numbers appear to be in contradiction to each other. I think Marty Walsh is committed to education. I think very much so. I think what he's encountering, though, is the really tough thing that all mayors encounter, and that is there is just not enough money. And what's really striking is that Walsh is actually the inheritor of a very solid city in terms of its financial situation from Tom Menino. And at the same time, he's also working right now in the best economy we've had in a decade plus. And if you can't really do it now and you really can't get the money for schools and other programs, what's going to happen 4 years from now or 6 years from now when we're back into another recession? Because eventually we will be back into another recession.
I want to also talk about a big issue that has affected Marty Walsh during his administration. And that, of course, actually started in 2014. That was the closure of the Long Island Bridge in October of 2014, cutting off programs for homeless folks and substance abuse programs that were housed on Long Island, and then folks had nowhere to go. I'm assuming the mayor will talk about this tonight because there was a huge issue last winter when it was very, very cold and there was nowhere for these people to go because these programs had been cut. And we actually visited a place called the Knight Center in Boston, which is a place that is a drop-in center for folks who are homeless. And we spoke with Dr. Jim O'Connell with Boston Healthcare for the Homeless about what happened and why they had to open this drop-in Knight Center for the Homeless because of the Long Island closure. And he said a lot of folks went to a place called Andrew House on Long Island before, but now all of those folks, plus an increased opioid epidemic, plus really bad weather and everything else, had really caused a problem. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Almost all of these people were in Andrew House at some point, so some portion of these people would be in now being detoxed with the hope of going on to a treatment thing, but now none of that is happening. By the time the morning comes, they're so sick they want to go and drink or do something, and they can't make it to the detox. So, and then even if they did go to detox, there would be no place to send. There's no place in the treatment system to send them, so they'd be back after 4 or 5 days. So I keep thinking that system has just fallen apart.
And that is Dr. Jim O'Connell with Boston Healthcare for the Homeless. He was speaking with us last winter about the lack of services after the closure of the bridge to Long Island, where many city programs were. Has Mayor Walsh stepped up to the plate and dealt with that crisis effectively? What do you say, Michael?
Well, you know, I work in my paid job besides the NAACP. I get to advocate for Boston Healthcare for the Homeless. So I know that there is not the kind of response that the homeless advocacy community has been looking for that really will address the needs of the homeless community. Mayor Walsh in his statement last year said, this isn't just a policy to me, it's personal. Mm. And I believe that's true. I believe he cares. I believe he gets it. I think when you know his personal story, it speaks to how
he
deeply
is in recovery, alcoholism. That's
how
right.
deeply mm-hmm. connected he is to the folks in that place. But I think it comes down to finding a solution. The 500 homeless veteran beds that he provided in Southampton Street is a step in the right direction. But in the advocacy community is just quite not enough. And I'm hoping that he'll speak to that tonight as well.
Mm-hmm. I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to special coverage of Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We are covering Boston Mayor Marty Walsh's second State of the City address that is expected to begin at Symphony Hall at 7:30. Until then, we are having a conversation with the president of Boston's NAACP, Michael Curry, and also former Boston City Councilor Tom Keene about what to expect in the mayor's address tonight. We will also be providing some analysis after the mayor concludes. And we did just briefly touch on the fact that a major theme in the mayor's address tonight is expected to be education. And who we'd like to also chime in on this subject as well is Lindsay Sobel. She's Massachusetts Senior Executive Director of Teach Plus, which is a teacher advocacy group. Lindsay, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Deborah.
I'm wondering if you can tell us, what are you hoping to hear from the mayor tonight?
Well, I'm really hoping to hear that he shares a is really committed to continuing the path that he's been on with education. We know that he is incredibly dedicated to closing the achievement gap. He has come in strong, really emphasizing teaching and learning, emphasizing hiring and retaining and supporting high-quality teachers in the city of Boston. And so I expect to hear that he'll be continuing that effort and really hope to hear that that is the plan going forward.
Now, we did speak with some parents and students who are actually protesting the mayor's address tonight, and they're very concerned about further budget cuts. What do you think about that?
I think that there is a real challenge around school budgets in Boston. You know, Boston Public Schools has placed some very strong bets on important priorities like expanded learning time, expanding pre-K, paying teachers what they deserve. Those kinds of emphasis areas then require very difficult choices to be made, and I think that we're seeing that now.
Mm-hmm. Remind us of where the mayor stands on charter schools, which has been a huge issue and will continue to be as the legislature continues to look at this. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think that what we are likely to hear from the mayor is a real call for us to kind of diminish the rancor around the issue of, you know, the charter cap and things like that, and instead really emphasize how do we ensure that all students get a great education in the city of Boston, and how do we make sure that we have great teaching no matter what the school type is.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think he's calling for a compromise, more or less?
I think he's calling for a better climate and a better conversation where we can all work together regardless of the type of school.
What do you think that Boston teachers need to hear from the mayor right now, especially when you hear the superintendent saying that they're going to have to make some significant budget cuts?
Mm-hmm. I think what they really need to hear is that he is continuing his commitment to supporting teachers as leaders in their profession. So we know that having teachers as a key voice at the table every time important decisions are being made is an essential component of ensuring student success. We know that having teachers as leaders in the transformation of their schools is really important. So I think what teachers want to hear is that he has continued to be committed to having teachers at the table, making these important decisions, and really committed to teacher support, and also to having a teaching force that is outstanding and that looks like the students of Boston.
Was there something the mayor did in the past year, since his last State of the City address, on education that struck you as, in one way or the other, as very positive or as something that really will probably come back to affect him in a negative way?
Well, I think a really important positive is that he helped with the selection of the superintendent for Boston Public Schools, who really shares his vision. You know, Dr. Tommy Chang is an educator at heart. We have seen him come in very strong as he has taken over as superintendent and really commit himself to supporting teachers, to teaching and learning, and ensuring that all students have a rigorous and engaging education every single day. And I think that that will serve him well over the years.
How could the Walsh administration improve what it's doing for Boston Public Schools?
I really think just that doubling down on the achievement gap, doubling down to ensure that we have an outstanding teacher in front of every child, and that we continue the effort to ensure the diversity of the teaching force. And I think that's a really important priority for him, and just want to make sure that that continues to be a priority over time.
Okay. Lindsay Sobel, Massachusetts Senior Executive Director at Teach Plus, which is a teacher advocacy group. Thanks very much for being with us as we cover Boston Mayor Marty Walsh's State of the City address here on 90.9 WBUR.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Tom Keene, who is with us in studio, former Boston City Councilor, I want to take this up with you because I think this is an issue that will continue to be part of the Walsh administration, and that's the issue of charter schools. How do you think that Marty Walsh is going to be able to walk a line here with, obviously, his support from the unions and his background working for unions, which are very much against charter schools because they say they take away the money from traditional public schools and folks who want more charters and want the cap lifted? And then we've got lawmakers also considering this on the state level.
Okay. So let me preface this by saying that in my day job, mm-hmm. I work for a charter school company down in Washington, D.C., a nonprofit that actually focuses on early education, but it does get involved with charter schools there. So just so you know my biases.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what Walsh is probably going to try to do tonight is to urge people to focus on kids rather than the adult squabbles. And that really is, the idea is that charter schools are simply a different path towards trying to get a quality education for kids. That can be done through traditional public schools as well as through alternative public schools such as charter schools. And I think his point is going to be that they should be part of the mix. He has been talking for a while about trying to do some sort of system where you can have enrollment, a unified enrollment system, so that parents can just go to one source and they can select either a traditional public school or a charter school. I think he will continue, and you know, his history has been he is a fan of trying new things when a system isn't working, and I certainly think that it isn't working well enough now for enough kids.
Hmm. Michael Curry, you think this is a big issue?
It is. It's been consuming a lot of our waking days with charter schools, and I think for many of us, and I'm in the circle of folks who are concerned about the growth of charter schools, is that no one I've talked to is anti-charter schools. They're just very pro-traditional public education, mm-hmm. and that the reality is there's some problems that we need to fix in our traditional system that, quite frankly, we're not showing the gumption, the initiative to fix. In addition to that, there are some issues in the charter movement that needs to be addressed as well, the ELL, the issues of English language learners and their absence from the charter system. From special education, the disciplinary issues as an African-American, people of color, we're deeply concerned about the numbers that show higher rates of suspension and expulsion, removal of families if they don't participate. There are some issues, and I've had very productive conversations with charter advocates, and I think they've been, you know, respectful conversations, but we are, NAACP and many others, very much opposed to lifting the cap.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about diversity, too, another issue, obviously, that we've heard a lot about this year, particularly in when we're talking about criminal justice. Now, this hasn't been really, relatively speaking, in Boston as much of an issue as it is in a lot of other cities, which some folks say is a credit to the Boston Police Department. And some folks say, you know, maybe there's not enough transparency for us to know if it actually is a problem. But we did speak about diversity within the department itself with Commissioner Evans earlier this year on Radio Boston, and we asked him about what it's like to increase diversity in the department, and he said there are several challenges of getting more men and women of color into the higher ranks of the department. Let's listen.
The challenge we have right now is because of the state civil service exam process is we're getting to the top of the list all white veterans. I love veterans. I love the sacrifice. They deserve everything they get, but it's boxing out African Americans in diversity.
That's Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans, who was speaking on Radio Boston last August about the difficulty in getting diversity into the higher ranks of the Boston Police Department. What do you say to that, Michael?
Yeah, so we've been working with Commissioner Evans on those issues. So one, veterans preference has been a barrier for many people of color. One of the questions I've asked is, where are the veterans of color? So we want to be productive and contribute to the search for veterans of color coming to Boston to take those jobs and be a part of our police force here. In addition, the barrier that it presents, and maybe that fight then has to go to the legislature to figure out a way to how do we promote, how do we support our returning veterans, but also make opportunities for others, particularly people of color, to have a presence in law enforcement. The only concern, the major concern, because there's several, the major concern I have is we've had a relatively quiet situation here. But the underlying issues exist here like they do in other places. The lack of diversity. We have cops that have race issues. And I think I've talked to many police officers who will tell you they know many. And it doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just they walk around with implicit biases. And hopefully they don't play out when they're walking down a street in our communities.
Then why aren't we hearing about that here as we are in other cities? Well, Do you think it is because there's a real effort here and we've done really good work, or are we taking credit for something that really may just be kind of luck?
I think we tend to be reactive when it's the extreme, right? It's the shooting of an unarmed Black or Latino male, and then we respond, and then there's a call for greater transparency and accountability. There is a conversation happening right now under this commissioner, credit to this mayor and this commissioner, where we're getting called to the table under what they call the Social Justice Task Force to talk about the use of force policy, the field interrogation and observation stops, the co-op program, or the citizen review program that they have, and all kind of issues, body cameras, and we're being engaged to talk about policy. That is a model for the rest of the country. And we're seeing videos right after they happen. We're texting. Me and the commissioner text right after a shooting, and then he invites us in the next day to talk about the incident. There's some good stuff to talk about here.
Is this a new step, say, post-Ferguson, Missouri? It is. This is something new, right?
I think it troubled him so much. I know it definitely must have troubled the mayor, but definitely troubled this commissioner so much that he then called me and said, what I'm seeing across this country, in Baltimore, in South Carolina, and in Ferguson, we don't want that to happen here. How do we prevent it? And he's taken the advice of many of us to say we need to work proactively on this. Mm-hmm. So, yes, in response to those things.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, Tom, can you tell us, were you paying attention to Mayor Walsh's speech last year?
No. Not really.
Well, I'm just wondering if you feel like he's fulfilled many of the things that he set out to do in this early time in office, and maybe not specifics from last year's address. I won't hold you to those.
So,
but how's he done
last year? Look, he did lay out a number of things last year. He talked about affordable housing, for example, and he is on track for that. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, it's largely because we have this incredible construction boom, and so you're able to do that. But it does seem like he's going to be meeting his plan for trying to hit affordable housing in Boston. I think on a number of other measures, his commitment to education is being shown. He is really showing that commitment to education. Crime rates, he talked about. Crime rates are actually quite low right now. They're another reduction, at least in terms of the homicide rate. So I think that he's done well, at least in terms of last year's speech. On the other hand, in last year's speech, he didn't really talk about, like, what would he do if there was a really gigantic snowstorm. And we had that. He didn't really talk a lot about how he's going to sue Wynn Resorts over the casino. And he spent over $1 million doing that. I bet he doesn't talk about that tonight. And he didn't talk about things like Top Chef either, which was the scandal involving the Teamsters and roping in City Hall. So there's a few things. And I think we had a different attitude to the Olympics back then, too.
Right. Well, maybe, right. Just a little. You know, I would like to go to our reporter who is standing by at Symphony Hall as we wait for Boston Mayor Marty Walsh to deliver his second State of the City address. WBUR's Fred Tice is there. Hello there, Fred.
Hey, Deb.
Can you tell us what's the mood like? What's happening now? This is sort of pre-speech.
Well, right now we're just waiting for the mayor to come onto the stage. I'm here in a press room where we can see the audience just sitting there and the stage empty and the microphone just ready for the mayor to walk up to it.
Mm-hmm. And Liz Walker from Roxbury Presbyterian Church was there, and as are several others. Is it a crowded hall? Are folks speaking?
So it's packed. It's absolutely packed. You saw a lot of the politicians talking to one another. Governor Baker, of course, is there. Members of the city council, former state legislators, former state representatives, senators. So they were all mingling about, but they've been sitting down now for quite some time because there's been a whole pre-program of, as you mentioned, Liz Walker and others doing the invocation, members of the Boston English High School choir singing. You have the whole artistic program while we were discussing what the mayor might talk about.
Are you talking to any folks there? Do you know what folks expect to hear? Why it's packed? Why there's perhaps a sense of excitement about what Mayor Walsh might say tonight, Fred?
The people I talked to tonight were the folks who were protesting outside the City Hall, Symphony Hall, and what they're really protesting there, their parents and teachers, is the emphasis of spending on the Boston Public Schools, what they call the budget cuts, but what they really mean by that is the emphasis on charter schools at the expense of district schools, Deb.
Mm-hmm. So that's what you think they're saying, is that you're concerned, that they're concerned, rather, that charter schools are going to be a big part of what's happening in the city, and that's what they want to make sure that their viewpoints are heard on, if you will.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, they definitely feel like this mayor is overemphasizing charter schools at the expense of district schools.
Okay.
You also heard some of the protesters talking about the fact that, as you mentioned earlier, so many homeless people were displaced from Long Island, and although a new shelter has been built, there's a feeling that the homeless are still not being taken care of the way they should be. Some of the protesters were calling them the refugees from Long Island,
right.
and talked about the need to pay attention to them.
Mm, I believe that Mayor Walsh has said, though, that most of the beds, at least for homeless folks, have been replaced. It's not the same, though, for folks who are looking for substance use treatment, isn't it?
Ladies and gentlemen, the mayor of the city of Boston.
I think we can expect him to talk about that tonight. Here comes the mayor. He's about to walk on stage.
Thanks, Fred. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh delivering his second State of the City address from Symphony Hall. You're listening to the mayor's address on 90.9 WBUR. Here's Mayor Walsh.
Thank you very much. I'd like to start by thanking the military veterans here tonight for your service to our country, and to the Gold Star families joining us. We honor you and we honor your loved ones. Governor Baker and constitutional officers, President Rosenberg and Speaker DeLeo, and members of the legislature, the Boston City Council, and all the federal delegation, Ambassador Flynn and his wife Kathy, clergy and community leaders, welcome. To my mother Mary and my brother John, to Laurie and Lauren and my family, thank you for your love and support. And to everyone in Symphony Hall tonight or watching at home, good evening. I'm here to report that the city of Boston is as strong as it's ever been. A year ago, I stood on this stage and invited you to help build a thriving, healthy, innovative future for our city. We are creating that vision together in Imagine Boston 2030, our first citywide plan in 50 years. And we are making it a reality by achieving the goals we set last year. In 2015, we built more homes than ever. Nearly 4,900 units started, a new record. Over 1,000 of those were affordable homes, a new record. And 3,800 homes were completed, another new record. We began construction on the Dearborn STEM Academy in Roxbury, Boston's first high school built specifically for science and technology. Violent crime and property crime went down for a second straight year, and homicides fell to a 16-year low. Unemployment fell to a 14-year low, and we also opened a state-of-the-art homeless facility, replacing every shelter bed from Long Island. We created the nation's first Office of Recovery Services to combat substance abuse, and we set new national standards for firefighter safety by investing in equipment to prevent job-related cancers. We defended our title as the number one American city for energy efficiency, and at the historic Paris Climate Talks, we beat out cities around the world to win the award for community engagement. To make City Hall more responsive, we launched a 311 system. We unveiled the pilot of our new website, and we gained international attention for CityScore, a first-of-its-kind, data-driven scoring system for city government. Make no mistake, the year brought challenges. It began with nearly 10 feet of snow. From the North End to Brighton to Hyde Park, we shoveled, we scraped, we salted, and we shoveled some more. But despite nearly $40 million in plowing costs, we worked with the City Council to end the year with our budget surplus intact, a perfect bond ratings, adding millions of dollars to invest in parks, schools, and senior housing. I want to take a moment to thank all 18,000 employees of the City of Boston, along with the businesses, nonprofits, and workers, students and teachers, immigrants and entrepreneurs, the dreamers and the doers, the young and the old, who make our city great. I am so proud of the work we did together. I've been in this job now for 2 years. But every morning I get up and I feel like my dream came true all over again. A kid from Dorchester who made some mistakes and needed some help gets to be mayor of the greatest city in the world. I think of how far I've come and the people who helped me, and I'm grateful. And I think of the people I meet all across our city who share their hopes and dreams with me, and I am inspired. But I also think about people who I meet who are struggling. I think about Brianna and her two children. I met them at the table of friends' Thanksgiving dinner at the TD Garden. They were hoping for a hot meal, but dreaming of a real home and a better life. And they weren't the only ones. No matter what progress we made in the day before or the year before, our work isn't done, not even close. But I have faith. I have faith that in Boston, we have the talent and we have the heart to keep doing that work until we are a city where every family can make a home, every kid gets a strong start in school, and every adult has a fair chance to build a career. That's the vision, and that's the work I recommit myself to every day. Tonight, as I discuss our plans for the coming year, I ask everyone to join me, to commit to each other, that we'll work together, we'll build our dreams together, and we'll leave no one behind. This is the vision of a community that Boston, at its best, has always been about. It's how we've made history, and it's how we'll make the future as well. That's why I look forward to welcoming General Electric to its new global headquarters in Boston. And with us tonight is Ann Klee, head of GE Site Selection Committee. Thank you, Ann, very much. GE is not only a historic innovator returning to the city where Thomas Edison got his start, it's not only another step forward for Boston on the world stage, it's a magnet for talent and investment that will direct towards our shared goals in opportunity and community and education. Thank you. I would say that was my mother, but she's sitting in the front row. That's the future I'm focused on, tonight and every day. And if you look around Symphony Hall, you'll see it. Hundreds of students from the Boston Public Schools are here. I invited them because they need to be part of the conversation about the direction their city is headed. And when it comes to schools, they deserve to know that their mayor is standing behind them. I want to take a moment to address them directly. I know how hard you work. I know the challenges you face. I was a struggling student in this city once, as were many of the adults in this room. We don't need you to be perfect. We need you to keep learning and keep believing in your dreams. The rest is on us. You deserve a community united behind you. That's what I want you and everyone to know. The Boston Public Schools are my priority. A year ago, I said, despite the many bright spots, I was not satisfied with our system's performance. So we went to work. We appointed a dynamic superintendent in Dr. Tommy Chang. We hired 24 new principals. I met with most of them personally. I'd like to ask all our principals in this hall tonight to please stand to be recognized. We began by extending the school day for every student through eighth grade. We are redesigning our high schools for a 21st century education. We invited the entire community to help create our 10-year school building plan. And for the third straight year, I will send a budget to the City Council that increases school funding for a total increase of nearly $90 million since I took office. Our students are making us proud. Fourth and eighth grade reached new heights on our national reading tests. 10th grade MCAS scores went up and the achievement gap shrank. I want to recognize the exceptional achievements at the Perkins Elementary in South Boston and English High in Jamaica Plain. I want to congratulate all our students and all our teachers for all of your hard work. Student success goes deeper than what we can measure in a classroom. The students here tonight show why. Take Kelsey King, a senior at the John D. O'Brien High School. She runs a clothing drive for fellow students in memory of the year her mother spent homeless. That's the kind of character and that's the kind of heart that we have in our schools. They are why we set our sights high and keep our eye on the prize. To end the achievement gaps, to make every school a success story, to create a national model for across-the-board excellence in urban education. Reaching that goal will take some hard work and more. It will require a unified effort. That's why the conversation around schools concerns me. Instead of unity, too often we see schools pitted against one another by adults. Tonight, I'm calling on everyone to come together to back all our children, all our teachers, and all our schools. That means fair and sustainable funding for both district and charter schools. It means exploring a unified enrollment system that could help families level the playing field amongst all schools. This spring, we will deepen the enrollment conversation to address challenges in special education, language services, discipline policies, and transportation. I know that passions run deep, and they should. But the commitment we share to Boston's children runs deeper. We have a tremendous opportunity to come together right now behind programs that experts, teachers, and parents all agree make a lasting difference. That's why I invite everyone to join me in making a stand for early education. The Boston Public Schools pre-kindergarten program is proven to close the achievement gap. The city has added seats each of the last 2 years, yet hundreds of children still sit on the waiting list, their parents frustrated, already doubting that system if it'll ever work for them. We've stretched funding as far as it can go, and we're not alone. I asked leadership at the State House and every legislator to work with Boston, with Lawrence, with Salem, with Attleboro, and other cities and towns to expand to high-quality pre-kindergarten. I know we share this priority. Now let's fund it. Let's work through the state budget process this year to make a full investment in our children, our families, and our Commonwealth's future. Let's live up to our reputation as the world leading learner and leading. Let's put Boston and Massachusetts at the forefront of early education. And let's give all our kids an equal chance at success. As Bostonians share their hopes with me, they also share the challenges. More often than not, housing is at the top of that list. Graduates in Alston, families in East Boston, seniors in Rosendale, people who are struggling to pay rents and find homes they can afford. We've worked relentlessly to meet the demand that's driving this pressure, and we're not letting up. Recently, we strengthened one of our most successful policies, inclusionary development. You can see its impact in places like the Hung Lock House in Chinatown, which kept longtime residents in their neighborhoods. The new policy will bring more affordable homes where they're needed the most, and it will spur middle-class housing across this city. New homes will help bring costs back to working people's budgets. But many just want a fair deal where they live right now. Last year, we doubled the compensation people get when their apartments are turned into condos. But we should do more than compensate. We should help people stay in their communities. Tonight, I can announce a new Office of Housing Stability to do just that. It's going to develop resources for tenants, incentives for landlords who do the right thing, and partnerships with developers to keep more of our housing stock affordable. People want to live in Boston, and that's a good thing. But we need to shape growth as a community, not let it shape us. That's what residents are doing all along the Red Line in South Boston and the Orange Line in Jamaica Plain. They're helping us build plan a vibrant community, walkable streets, affordable homes, diverse businesses, and great open space. And tonight, I can announce two new planning areas, Glover's Corner in Dorchester and Dudley Square in Roxbury. These conversations will unlock the vitality that makes city neighborhoods great. And all across the city, imagine Boston 2030, is rooting our city's planning strategy in these same community visions. So I'm pleased to announce that Imagine Boston's director, Sarah Meyerson, will become the new director of planning at the Boston Redevelopment Authority. And while we plan, we'll invest in quality of life all across our city. Our parks budget is the biggest in Boston's history. We've transformed parks in Mattapan, in Charlestown, East Boston, and completed an open space plan for the entire city. This year, we'll convert over 6 acres of land into permanent new parks. I grew up in the parks. I know how much kids and families depend on them. So I was moved when a group of young people came to see me at Ramsey Park in the South End last summer. They told me what it was like to grow up right next to a park that was too unsafe to use, and how they've been working to fix it. Well, tonight, they are here. And I'm happy to tell them, because of your advocacy, with your input, we are going to completely renovate Ramsey Park. We're going to ensure that America's first public park system are America's best. And inspired by the Martin Richard Playground being built next to the Children's Museum, America's most inclusive parks as well. we're also deepening our commitment to the arts and culture. This summer, we'll cap a $78 million investment in the Boston Public Library by unveiling its new entrance on Boylston Street in the Back Bay. We'll also complete Boston Creates, a roadmap for supporting the arts in every neighborhood, and we'll invest $1 million into local artists. As we grow, we have to support the older residents who built this city. I think of Maria Sanchez, who has devoted her life to her neighbors in Mission Hill. Together, we celebrated 40 affordable senior apartments in a building named in her honor by the Roxbury Crossing T-Stop. She is with us here tonight. People like Maria are the reason we invested $3 million in senior housing, and we secured new senior discounts for water, for cable, and for internet rates. And this year, we'll go further, building a plan to make Boston America's most age-friendly city. Workers and employers moving forward together. That's our economic vision, and it's proven success. What we offered GE was less an incentive package than a cultural advantage, innovation, education, and a community that works and grows together. This creative collaborative approach defines our growth strategy, not only to attract new businesses, but to empower the workers and employers already here. This year, we'll launch a business expansion toolkit to help employers add jobs and support workers. We'll open a small business center to boost entrepreneurs so vital to both the economy and our community. And we'll offer 40 more of our groundbreaking salary negotiation workshops for women. We'll build our new apprentice programs with job training and a 2-year degree for low-income workers. And we'll take the conversation about inequality one step further. We will bring workers and employers together in a task force to study a $15 an hour minimum wage for the city of Boston. Wherever I go across the country, I'm asked about policing. That's because at a time of great national tension, we continue to build trust. Our police officers, street workers, and young people are engaging. Working with the building trades and others in job training programs like Operation Exit, we are offering second chances and turning lives around. We have identified the community to help shape our anti-violence strategy in peace walks and social justice meetings, and in relationships that grow stronger every day, we are coming together. It's making a difference. Boston police officers this year took nearly 800 guns off the street. Violent crime went down by 3%, property crime went down by 10%, all major crime went down by 9%, homicides hit a 16-year low, all the while arrests dropped by 15% as well. What that means is we are becoming a safer city, not by locking people up, but by lifting people up. In addition, our clearance rate for solving homicides passed 72%, 15 points higher than the national average for cities our size. Our police and our communities are working together. It's not us and them in Boston, it's we. And we won't let up for a minute. With non-fatal shootings up slightly last year, we can't afford to. It's not just a city problem, it's America's problem. 2 weeks ago, I went to the White House, to Washington, and stood with the president as he unveiled next steps to keeping guns out of the hands of criminals. I said there what I say here, Americans agree on common sense gun reform. in Boston, we are showing how to turn consensus into action. So we'll keep working with our cities and states, with experts and survivors, with gun dealers and owners. We'll keep building trust in the community every day, and we'll face up to the impact of history as well. In community conversations on race and class, we are working through divisions that run deep in our city's social fabric, and we are turning this healing into real measurable change towards a more equitable city. We'll take another step this year by backing the Boston Basics Campaign, a grassroots community movement to close learning gaps from birth to 3 years old. We are breaking new ground and offering new hope. We are proving that when Boston comes together, when we truly act as one community, we can change our city and change the world. We've been doing it for a long time, from the first public library to the first Office of Recovery Services. Boston is a city on the cutting edge of the common good. We can do the same for urban education if we come together. We can do the same for housing and income and wealth inequality if we work together. That's what I ask each of us to commit to tonight. Bring to the table not just your own wants, but a vision for our common welfare. Find common ground, even when you don't agree with everything. Protect what we love about our city by sometimes embracing change. Let me introduce to you one more Bostonian who inspired me last year. Donald Wilkins is an Air Force veteran I met in our Home for the Brave program. It placed more than 500 veterans in permanent housing. Donald told me how the stigma of homelessness crippled his pride away. He said our new system and his new apartment in West Roxbury was the key to a new life. Donald is with us tonight. Thank you, Donald. It's because of his courage and the courage of countless veterans like him that I am so proud to announce we have ended chronic veterans homelessness in the city of Boston. And we are working every day to end all chronic homelessness in our city by the year 2018. Tonight, I've asked Bostonians to come together, to go the extra mile, to make sure success reaches everyone. I've asked because I know not just the state of our city, but the soul of our city is strong. Every day, I see us building our dreams together. Every day, my love for this city and my belief in this city grows. We will meet our challenges and keep changing the world, and our future will be greater than any one of us could ever imagine. I want to thank you all. May God bless the city of Boston, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and the United States of America.
That's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh giving his second State of the City address at Boston Symphony Hall tonight. You're listening to special coverage on Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. With me in the studio tonight is former Boston City Councilor Tom Keene and also president of Boston's NAACP, Michael Curry. And first, I'm going to start with you, Tom. Overall, initial reaction to the mayor's roughly 30-minute address tonight.
I thought it was a very solid, very workmanlike speech. It didn't have a lot of soaring rhetoric, but it had a lot of very concrete points. There was one piece of soaring rhetoric, however, that should be pointed out. It was really when he was talking about the issues that arose out of Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about, and I think the line was, he said, "We are becoming a safer city, not by locking people up, but by lifting right. people up." And that was a great line right. and got great applause
right.
and should have.
Right. Now, you know, we started off our special coverage talking about what we wanted to hear from the mayor. And I think that both you and Michael were in agreement here that what we've got in the city and that's going to be a real struggle is an opportunity divide and gentrification. So the mayor touched on this and he said, he talked about affordable housing. And he said 1,000 of 4,900 new homes in the city were affordable housing, and that is a record. He also talked about a new Office of Housing Stability that he's created. Is that enough? A step in the right direction? What do you think?
I think probably not. And I'm very, very wary about what the Office of Housing Stability is and whether or not what he's talking about is some sort of return to a rent control type situation, which really could not happen in this state. But I mean, I think these are good things to do. Sometimes I think that's what's happening with cities is that this is the change that's going on with cities and sort of the new urbanism is something that's bigger than a mayor alone can influence.
Mm-hmm. Michael Curry, I want to go to you as well. Your initial reaction.
Yeah, I thought, I know the mayor very well, and I think he is a genuinely good guy who really wants to tackle all these issues. I think for me, as I wanted more specificity. I wanted him to speak to how he's going to get some of this stuff done. I know in 30 minutes you don't have a lot of time. He didn't really touch on really the neighborhood conversations that I was waiting to hear. So when he talked about where the unemployment, 14-year low in unemployment, so I think that's around 4.1%, twice in communities of color, over 8% unemployment. I need to hear that. I think for the communities that I represent, they want to hear urgency. Mm-hmm. They want to hear that that we are not in a good place. When you're talking about violence, the numbers are better, but those of us, and I grew up in Roxbury, it may be temporary, right? Next 2016 could be worse. So I think, his vision is there. I think what I'm hoping we'll get more is really the specificity on how we'll get this done. And I want to hear more urgency, and I've said that to this administration.
We heard a lot about education tonight. And we also heard something about the mayor calling on folks to bring to the table, quote, not just our own wants, but a vision for our common welfare that some may interpret as meaning something about education. Michael Curry, what are you thinking that the mayor was saying when he was talking with folks and asking them to embrace change?
Yeah, he was definitely talking about part the charter school conversation, and I think he struck what I would believe maybe is the right tone around we need to come together and have the conversation and figure out where we are and what can be done. And I think that there are many of us, including folks in this room, who are ready to have that conversation. I think the divide may be an ideological one, right? It may be something that is just as divided as Republicans, Democrats on taxes, right? Mm-hmm. Is that sometimes it's a matter of we can only get so far in our compromise. And I think, but we got to sit down and have the conversation. And he really pushed that in his message tonight.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to the phones right now and talk with someone who was at the mayor's address tonight. And she can continue the conversation for us about education. Marie St. Fleur is president and CEO of the nonprofit research and advocacy organization called the Bessie Tart Wilson Initiative for Children. She's also a former state representative. She represented the 5th Suffolk District, which includes parts of Dorchester and Roxbury. And she was a representative there for more than a decade. Marie St. Fleur, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So what was your reaction to the mayor's speech?
I thought it was a very strong speech. I thought the mayor did what he needed to do this evening. I mean, the mayor, in essence, has to establish a vision for the city, create hope in the city, and really rally the folks in the city together in order to move forward toward a common agenda. Mm-hmm. I think he tried to do that. I think he outlined what he has seen his administration accomplish over the past 2 years and what he hopes will be accomplished in the coming year. I think what was critical that even though it was a very positive spin and there are a lot of great things going on in Boston, I think he also tried to, in a very positive way to get folks to touch on a couple of things. I mean, he actually raised the issue of race and class that exists in the city and that we all have a responsibility to deal with it. He spoke on the issue of inequality and the fact that we really need to take some measurable steps to begin to work at it. What I like most, as you all know, I spent a lot of time working on the issue of education, is the fact that he put it on the table that, you know what, we are a very diverse city, not simply on race, creed, and, in language and culture, but we make different choices for our children. And that they're all our children, and we should be able to have a place at the table for a real conversation to happen, whether they are in public or in whatever form of public school that they're in. What I liked as well is the fact that he had all the span of children who are in school represented. In that poem that was read today, you had kids from the Catholic schools, the charter schools, and in the public schools. I think it's a wonderful message about the fact that they're all our children. As adults, we need to get out of the way and do what ought to be done to provide the resources, the leadership, and the action to help them to better for themselves. I thought that was a very strong message. And as you all know, I love early ed, so I was so happy to hear some good things about early ed.
About pre-K. Okay, Marie St. Fleur, President and CEO of the nonprofit research and advocacy organization, the Bessie Tart Wilson Initiative for Children. Thanks very much for speaking with us. I'd also like to go to Symphony Hall as well, to WBUR's Fred Tice, who is there as Boston Mayor Marty Walsh just wrapped up his second State of the City address. And Fred, I'm wondering, where was, do you think, the most applause during the mayor's speech, and where were there maybe some groans, if you will?
Where I noticed the greatest applause, Deb, was when he gave a shout-out to Boston English High School, which, when the MCAS scores came out for the English, you'll remember state officials thought that there was something wrong, there was an anomaly. And it turned out, in fact, that there's been a great improvement there. This is a high school that, in the past, has had a reputation for not being such a great high school. And so that's what jumped out at me. You know where I was surprised that he didn't get a lot of applause, and we were talking about this before the speech, was when he was talking about how everybody needed to stand together, and that he was going to fund both charter schools and district schools, and there was this very tepid applause there, and I'm not sure whether that's because people believe it, or don't believe it, rather, or just because they weren't really up on the tensions, but that seems hard to believe to me. It seems like maybe there was some skepticism there that there was going to be enough funding for both charter schools and district schools, Deb. Mm-hmm.
So what's the mood like? What else struck you from this evening, Fred?
Well, one of the things he talked about, of course, is that Boston is the safest it's been since 1999. Now, of course, that's something that started under Mayor Menino, and it's always really hard to know what factors play in the reduction of crime. He celebrated GE's move of its global headquarters
couple
to Boston.
Times. Couple times he celebrated.
A couple of times, and he talked about how he didn't woo, from his perspective, he did not woo GE with financial incentives so much as with a culture of innovation and education. Mm-hmm. Those were a couple of things that I noticed.
All right, WBUR's Fred Tice at Symphony Hall. Fred, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to do it.
You are listening to Radio Boston special coverage of Mayor Walsh's State of the City address. With me in the studio, as we said earlier, former Boston City Councilor Tom Keene and Boston NAACP President Michael Curry. And I'd like to ask you, Michael, we've spoken about some of the things that the mayor said regarding the inequality in the city, which is clearly an issue. I think that what we can say perhaps from this State of the City address is charter schools, income inequality, and crime, really, were probably the top issues that the mayor addressed in this speech. But when he said a $15 minimum wage for Boston, how did that strike you? Do you think that is a realistic proposal for Boston?
Well, I think it's the movement going on across the country, right, is that many of the organizations have been pulled into, raise up Massachusetts, raise up, you name the state, name the city. Mm. So I think he's been ahead of the curve on some of this stuff when you look at issues across the country. Signed on to things that, quite frankly, other mayors were fighting. So I think it's a credit to him that he's looking to address the minimum wage issue. And, Boston's a tough city to live in. I was born and raised here. The housing is difficult to afford to live in the city, as was said earlier. And quite frankly, you need to earn a livable wage in order to live in the city. And I think he's committed to doing that.
What was missing tonight, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think, I've been here before, whether it's State of the Cities or State of the Commonwealth or, Nation, State of the Union, where the vision's there, but you wonder whether the delivery will be there, because it's really about balancing priorities and budgets. And we would all do that differently. So I think for me, now I want to go from what he said tonight to really digging into how it will be done, how he'll pay for preschool, how he'll address the unsolved murder rate, how he'll deal with the gentrification that's happened in the communities where I was born and raised, and the unemployment rate that's still disparately high in Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan. I didn't get the specificity here, but I'm holding him to his word that, he's committed to every neighborhood, every person, And we look forward to seeing how he does that.
All right, Tom Keene, well, how about you? Let's wrap up. What do you think first, though? What do you think may have been missing and you look forward to perhaps the mayor dealing with in the year ahead?
Well, I really think Michael touched on it, which is that there was a lack of specificity. The $15 minimum wage isn't something he's putting in place. Instead, he's going to have a task force. He's telling us we're going to have a lot of conversations about things, but conversations may lead to nowhere, and I don't know where he thinks they should necessarily go. Much of his language was imprecise, and so I don't necessarily know what he's going to accomplish, although he's very clear about the number of affordable housing units. That's quite clear. I also think that Michael's right in that sometimes averages obscure, and so when we talk about unemployment rates or crime rates and so on, things really are very different on the ground. And everyone in Boston knows that, that there are neighborhoods that are really suffering and other neighborhoods have no crime whatsoever. I mean, that's actually the difference that's there. So when you say, oh, it's an average crime rate's dropped, it may not tell you a lot about what's happening in some very specific
And nationally crime rates dropped.
Nationally crime rates have dropped as well.
Mm. So both of you think, okay, if we're going to give some pointers to Mayor Walsh for next year, you need to be a little bit more specific.
Absolutely. Right. Let's name neighborhoods. You know, let's talk Roxbury, Dorchester, yes. South Boston, Brighton, Alston, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No.
We're already giving him pointers for next year.
I think Tom hit it. I think that's perfect. And I think, you know, again, he's a committed mayor, and I think it's up to us to hold him accountable.
Okay. You've been listening to Radio Boston's special coverage of Boston Mayor Marty Walsh's second State of the City address from Symphony Hall. We've been joined in the studio this evening by Michael Curry, who's president of the Boston NAACP. Thank you very much for being with us. Also with us in the studio, Tom Keene, former Boston City Councilor and writer for WBUR's Cognoscenti. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And this hour, we spoke with Lindsay Sobel. She's Massachusetts Senior Executive Director at Teach Plus. We also heard from Marie St. Fleur, president and CEO of the Bessie Tart Wilson Initiative, and WBUR reporter Fred Tice was with us as well from Symphony Hall, where Boston Mayor Walsh gave his second State of the City address. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.